This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. The 10th International Conference on Climate Change is going on right now in Washington. The ICCC. Just make sure you don't confuse it with the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which issues the UN report on global warming. Because this conference is the creation of the Heartland Institute, the think tank that promotes skepticism and some say just outright denial about human-caused global warming. It's a meeting place for politicians, policymakers, and a few scientists, just about anyone who doesn't agree with the scientific consensus on climate change. And to give you a taste of what they're talking about, James Taylor, here he is, the head of the Heartland Institute, some stuff he said in a speech yesterday.
When people talk about the social cost of carbon, talk about the social benefits. Global warming stopped the famine that killed 100,000 people.
So global warming is a good thing, stopping the famine that killed 100,000 people. Just a short while ago, the rhetoric was that global warming is the greatest hoax ever perpetuated on mankind. So behind the rhetoric, as we approach a big election year where the majority of Americans believe in climate change, are global warming deniers and politicians shifting their tactics on global warming? Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent for The Takeaway, stopped by the conference to find out. He joins us from Washington today. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Can you give us a taste of what it was like there at the conference?
Well, it's a small conference. If you're expecting anything on the order of a giant ballroom filled with enthusiasts, it's not quite like that. It's a small ballroom in a hotel near Capitol Hill where this particular conference was held. And I would guess 150 to 200 people in the room, and this is only a subjective guess on my part. I'd put the median age around 64 to 68 of the attendees there from the back of the room where I was sitting. And really the rhetoric at the meeting, Ira, skewed to a lot of different places. You played one cut there saying, well, carbon actually has a social benefit. It saved us from famine. But things are a little bit all over the map when it comes to their interpretation of the data. Some of the researchers or skeptics or deniers that you hear say global warming is not real. They say measurements are skewed or inaccurate, that ocean buoys don't accurately measure surface temperature or water temperature so that there is no warming trend. Or they say there is a warming trend, but that it's cyclical and there are natural cycles on Earth. Or that carbon doesn't cause warming in the way that we think it does. Or that if there is warming, it won't be harmful. So it's a little difficult in that way to put your finger on one message. Mm-hmm. I guess the takeaway message is don't worry about it.
Now, you caught up with Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe, the chair of the Senate Environment Committee and author of the book The Greatest Hoax, about the saying that the global warming is the greatest hoax ever perpetuated on the American public. Who had this to say about the Vatican's stance on climate change. And the Vatican's stance is that it is real and that it's a moral imperative to solve it. And this is what Senator Inhofe had to say.
Well, the Pope ought to stay with his job and let us stay with ours.
The Pope says it's a moral issue.
Well, I don't agree with that. I think it's a moral issue.
Is
really
the Pope
on
immoral?
The other side. No, he's not. No, same that.
But is he wrong?
I'm not going to talk about the Pope. I'm saying that if you let him run his shop, we're in ours.
Wow. That was very interesting catching him in the hallway there.
Well, Senator Inhofe is a champion of this particular group and of climate, the sort of climate denial section of American politics, not only for his book, which is famous, but for his many floor speeches, including one a couple of months ago where he now famously brought a snowball onto the Senate floor in order to prove that it's still cold out.
Yeah,
James Inhofe plays a couple of different roles. He is a climate skeptic and clearly a denier, but he's got a sense of humor. He likes to goad people a little bit. We call it trolling, and that's why he brought the snowball onto the floor, because it makes his enemies really, really mad and gets them talking about him. But he's a champion of this group. He got a thunderous a round of applause. A lot of people are looking forward to the Paris Conference on Climate Change and New Agreements. He cast a lot of shade on that potential agreement, a lot of shade on the EPA, on on President Obama, on the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and their efforts to measure climate change. So he's really celebrated. I think they gave him an award, too.
Of course, as they're fond of reminding us, most politicians are not scientists when you ask them about global warming. I'm not a scientist. So how much of that science they present is fact-based? I want to bring on Dave Levitan, science writer at factcheck.org in Philadelphia. He scoured the statements of politicians and even the president for scientific accuracy. And we asked him to take a look at a few speeches from this conference, too. Welcome to Science Friday, Dave.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Now, the first clip we have is from Senator Inhofe's keynote speech, some surprising news about polar bears.
Polar bears. You know, there is a problem with polar bears right now. It's overpopulation. If you look at this, the alarmist, the polar bears are disappearing. Well, that's not quite true, because in the 60s, the number of Canadian polar bears was between 5,000 and 10,000. Today, they're between 15,000 and 25,000. So it is actually tripled.
David, fact check that.
Sure. Well, actually, this claim has been around for quite a while now. Factcheck.org covered this way back in 2008, long before my time here. But I could tell you what they found. It still seems to hold. Basically, the numbers on polar bear populations are controversial. The fact is, we don't know for sure how many polar bears there are, and we certainly knew less about it back in the 60s and 70s. It's just a hard thing to count. They're solitary animals. They live in extremely difficult-to-access locations, and they wander around a lot, just making it hard to have a firm count. So it's not an easy thing to say that the population has tripled. Right now, the World Wildlife Fund thinks there are between 20 and 25,000 polar bears in the wild. But back in the 70s, the estimates ranged everywhere from 5,000 to over 20,000. So it's just not something that we have firm evidence about.
Now, we know the ice that they live on is disappearing in the summertime in the North Pole.
Absolutely, yes. So their habitat, whether or not it's actually manifesting in numbers declines yet, their habitat is certainly disappearing pretty rapidly.
The next clip we have is from Representative Lamar Smith of Texas. He's head of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee, which controls, among other things, NASA's budget.
The president claims that droughts, wildfires, and floods, quote, are now more frequent and more intense. But this is contradicted by the underlying science from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC. The fact is, there is little evidence that climate change causes extreme weather events.
Dave?
Well, the connections between climate change and extreme weather are certainly complicated, but this claim that there is little evidence of any connection is certainly not correct. He's actually done this before. We wrote a piece about an op-ed he wrote in the Wall Street Journal. He tends to pick specific findings from the IPCC regarding extreme weather, but then ignores a whole bunch of other ones. For example, there is a flat trend in hurricane activity overall, but they have found it is virtually certain that the strongest storms in the Atlantic basin, virtually certain, by the way, is 99 to 100%. So these are the storms that hit the east coast of the United States, are becoming more frequent since the 1970s. There's also good evidence that droughts, that which he mentioned, and heat waves in certain parts of the world are becoming more frequent and more severe. And there are other ones, too. Heaviest rainstorms are increasing in some areas. Basically, there's a whole lot of different parts to extreme weather, and to boil it down to one line claiming there's no evidence at all certainly doesn't do the issue justice.
And our last clip is another bit from Representative Smith's speech about global temperatures.
A news release earlier this year by NASA shouted that 2014 was the warmest year on record. But the release failed to mention that scientists were only 38% certain that that was accurate, less than 50-50.
Dave?
Well, so this one's a little bit complicated. On the surface, he's correct. NASA did find that there was a 38% probability that 2014 was the warmest year on record, but that's definitely not the whole picture. That percentage is substantially higher than any other individual year. In other words, no other year has as high a chance of having been the warmest year on record. NASA says 38%. NOAA, the other agency that studies climate, actually says 48%. So they're more confident about this. But if you have to pick a winner, you pick 2014, followed by other years that are very recent as well.
In fact, the 10 hottest years and the 132-year record have all occurred since 1998, and nine
That's
of
right.
the 10 have occurred since 2002.
That's right. And, I mean, any climate scientist will tell you that the record of the individual warmest year isn't even really that important. It's the trend that matters a lot more. And as you said, all the hottest years have occurred in recent years. And basically, this decade is warmer than the last. That decade was warmer than the one before that, and so on.
Well, thank you very much, David, for straightening that stuff out for us.
Thank you very much for having me.
David Levitan is a science writer at factcheck.org in Philadelphia. Todd Zwick is also with us. Zwillick is also with us. He's a Washington correspondent over at our friends at the Takeaway. Some more about how that was sort of reflected, the mood of the meeting going on there?
Well, a lot of, you know, you get the sense when you go to this meeting, because the attendees there are very much in the minority. I was thinking when I was there, it was a little bit of a bunker mentality, but that's only because it was literally in the basement floor of the hotel on Capitol Hill. So it was hard to escape the comparison. But I mentioned that it's a small meeting and a group that knows that's in the minority. And even though a lot of the scientific interpretation was all over the map, you heard a lot of people saying that also that they're not, you know, it's not because they're conservative. It's not because they're against doing anything about climate change. They just want sound science. They're making a plea for sound science, and sort of a familiar refrain that you do, frankly, hear from liberals, too, is that the other side of this can't possibly have a scientific or knowledge motive or a public welfare motive. They must have a financial one.
Mm-hmm. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island, has been giving a climate speech on the Senate floor. Excuse me. Every week the Senate's in session, and he just gave his 100th speech. You caught up with him in the Capitol last week to ask whether some Senate Republicans secretly wish they could side with him on something like a carbon tax. And this is what he said.
You ever had a former ally on climate change say to you, White House, I wish I could, but they'll club me?
All the time. One said, I want to be with you, but I've got to be so deft at how I get there. A different colleague said, keep working on your carbon fee. I know it's the right thing. I can't get there now, but I want to get there.
These are Republicans?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah. But if you're a Republican and you're thinking about this, you've got a bunch of worries. If it turns out that you are really wrong all along, and you've got all this money coming in from the fossil fuel industry, and your state's being hurt as a result of your errors, that's a tough combination to live with.
Hmm. Did you get the impression that he was hopeful? He felt that the tide, so to speak, might be turning and getting more moderate Republicans on board and thinking about the consequences?
Well, we got to parse that a little bit, because moderate Republicans is a species that's so endangered now, Ira. If I take you briefly into the political world, there aren't a lot of moderates left in Congress on either side of the aisle. Because it's so polarized, Democrats defeated so resoundingly in the House, they're all really liberal now. And in the Senate, largely in reaction to President Obama's election and the economic collapse, there aren't a whole lot of Republican moderates left. So if you're looking for some, if White House is looking for some, I'll tell you, he may have those conversations, but I think he's probably pretty realistic about the chances of that changing soon. Although it does make it pretty interesting sort of what you've seen going on lately with some new conservative Republican donors who are wading in with big money to try to change some Republican minds on this.
Let me get to that in a minute. First, remind everybody that this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Talking with Todd Zwillick, Washington correspondent for our friends over at The Takeaway. Let's get into this. This is a presidential year. It's coming up. All these candidates are. You're saying there's new money, Republican money, that is wanting to get Republicans to do something about climate change? Real serious money?
Yeah, it seems like serious money. There's this guy named James Faison, who maybe a lot of your listeners haven't heard of. He's a wealthy audiovisual equipment executive from North Carolina. He made a ton of money when he sold his company called Snap AV. And actually, this was a guy that James Inhofe at the conference this week railed against and really got a lot of laughs from the crowd, because they do not like this guy. He's a self-described Christian conservative who's, you know, Republican in every sense, is against Obamacare and everything else, except that he thinks that Republicans are missing the mark on climate change, that they should recognize that it's a real issue and that they should be getting behind free market ideas to do something about it. He says, you know, not the EPA, not regulations, not the kind of things that we conservatives hate, but real free market solutions, you know, increase solar renewables, get the government out of the way so that people can more easily use clean and renewable technology. And when I tell you big money, how about $175 million of his own money, or $165 of it anyway, that he said he's pouring in to internet ads, social media engagement, online ads and advertisement, to try to give some space for Republicans to acknowledge that climate change is a real thing, that they should recognize as something that needs to be solved, that it doesn't have to be the EPA or Barack Obama or Nancy Pelosi that does it, and that they should get on board.
Hmm. And is he getting any traction with with politicians?
It's too early to tell because this has only just started. If you want to talk about the group that I visited with at the Heartland Institute, the answer is no. There's a great deal of ridicule, Rhino, and they called him, sort of a pretend conservative if he can possibly be for this. And they kind of resent his money that's pouring in. They're used to this from, people like Tom Steyer, the famous liberal billionaire who's poured a lot of millions on the Democratic side of this, which is not surprising to you, but this guy's a Republican, so it's too early to tell what kind of effect it will have. I can tell you this, that so far in American politics, the hopes that climate change will be a top electoral issue, Ira, that will drive voters to the polls or make them choose one candidate over the other, that's never materialized. People are concerned about it, they say. All the polls show that both Republicans and Democrats, although it's not the same proportion of each of those groups, say they're concerned about climate change, but I got to tell you, very few people vote on this issue. Mm-hmm. Very few people choose their candidate.
Isn't Jeb Bush on the record as saying that climate change is a real thing?
Well, yes, and here's an interesting thing about it, and what's, sort of why you have to wonder if there might be a tactical shift. Jeb Bush is not quite the same as every other Republican candidate in the sense that when he does finally announce his candidacy here, he's not an official candidate yet, he's really running a long game here. You know, he is in a Republican primary, but he's not running hard conservative like so many of the other more than dozen candidates are. And Jeb Bush has said that he thinks climate change is an issue. He thinks it's a problem that has to be dealt with. However, we can't do anything economically damaging. We shouldn't marginalize people who say this, that the science isn't settled yet. So he's hedged on this. But it's interesting that the candidate, Republican candidate, who's taking the long view of a general election doesn't think it's in his interest to say this isn't real and it's a hoax.
Todd Zwillick in Washington, thank you for being with us. We're going to take a break.
It's my pleasure.
We'll be right back.